Union Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio my cousin, Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons, who is a well-known Bahamian medical obesity management expert. She's also certified in internal medicine and endocrinology, as well as diabetes and metabolism. She's also here to speak about her membership with the Obesity Action Coalition. I'm also very pleased to have the esteemed Dr. Jeanette Martin, RN, PhD, registered nurse, who's a counselor and behavioral therapist, certified health and chronic disease coach, certified diabetes education, certified exercise coach for special populations. So that's a mouthful, but I thank you for both of you being here. It's a pleasure to have you. Just on a side note, I know my grandfather, who Ariane and I were very close with, is smiling down from heaven to see the two of us here trying to provide some education and outreach and trying to empower our Bahamian populace and trying to improve the quality of life. He always stressed education in our family. He himself was never got beyond grade 3 education. And in those days, with all the oppression and racism, grade 3 wasn't what grade 3 is now. So he actually had to teach himself how to read and write. He had to start work building the actual original British colonial hotel. And he became a construction mogul himself and retired by the age of 55. He had 11 children who he brought up in a God-fearing family, along with his wife, Hilda Tinker, who is originally one of the McDonald's from Cat Island, and stressing education in the time that a lot of Bahamians didn't have that opportunity, where because of oppression, because of Jim Crow, because of segregation, a black man, a black woman can only want to be a gardener or a cook, or the best thing you could hope for is a life of being a musician where you can work in a hotel and possibly get tips. So for his 11 children to go on to get a university education was unheard of at the time. And unfortunately, his younger brother, D.W. Davis, who the school was named after, actually had 12 children of his own. And unfortunately, he was struck down by a car in the prime of his life. And my grandfather, Sir Cyrus Ulysses Davis, actually went on to help raise his nieces and nephews, 12 nieces and nephews, along with his own 11 children. So my grandfather put 23 children through university. And we're here as a testament to him. We have many cousins who have done great things. And just, I'll speak, Ariane, I've had this topic before about brain drain. Mm-hmm. You have very accomplished sisters. You have a sister who is a pulmonologist, an intensivist who went to Stanford. You have another sister in Maryland who is a pediatric dentist. I have a sister who I pale in comparison to, who got a Harvard summa cum laude economics degree, went on to top her law class, and went on to be a U.S. district attorney, is now equity partner in one of the biggest law firms in the United States. My brother went to one of the top medical schools at Columbia University in New York, did internal medicine, and then went on to do gastroenterology and did a fellowship. But of the three of my children's, my parents' children, I'm the only one to come back to the Bahamas. And likewise, you're the only one to come back. Why is that? Why do we have so many of our accomplished, and there's so many Bahamians out there doing great things throughout the world and contributing to other countries? Imagine, I can only imagine, even for our own family, if the 15 or so cousins that we have who are accomplished in their own right and in their own careers came back and contributed to our society, and if every other family had likewise their accomplished progeny coming back, how great our country would be.
I 100% agree. And I think it's not out of a desire. I mean, they want to come. It's just incredibly difficult when they do come. So, you know, some will come and they'll wait a year to get a job, and then they're passed over, even though they're incredibly accomplished and deserving. So it just becomes easier to go back where you're appreciated. So it's unfortunate.
But unfortunately, we're never going to improve our country. We're never going to uplift our country if nobody comes back. If we're producing greatness and we never see them again once they attain that greatness. So we need to make it more hospitable. We need to encourage those who want to come back to come back. Obviously, we wanted to come back and make a difference, and that's what we're doing right here. We both have very long days, and we're always tired when the nighttime falls, but we're here talking about a very important topic. And this is unfortunately something that's a horrible statistic for the Bahamas, and that's in terms of obesity. Give me some idea, either Dr. Martin or Ariane Davis-Simmons, what are the obesity rates in the Bahamas in terms of childhood obesity, in terms of adult obesity, when we're looking at other countries in the world?
Great. So I'll let Dr. Martin, go ahead and take that.
Okay. In the Bahamas, presently, we're ranked number 4. And in 2004, we were ranked number 2014, we were ranked number 6 as the most obese country in the world. We have over 70% of our population who are obese, and over 80% who are overweight when you look at the adults. When we look at children, we don't have a lot of recent studies on children, but the last set of studies that were done was the Living Health Survey that was done. We had about 30% of our children who were overweight and trending toward obesity. And that was years ago. That was done in 2001. And so now we're in 2025 with an obese rate of, we're fourth in the world, and we're over 70% obesity with our adult population. What does that mean as it relates to worldwide percentages? Is that according to the World Obesity Federation, in 2030, 100% of our children will be obese. And that's in 2030. That's 5 years away. And Dr. Davis-Simmons and I, we have this conversation all the time. What are we doing to stem this progression of overweight and obesity? You go to a kid's party, you can just pick out, you know, out of 5 children, at least 3 or 4 of them are either overweight or obese. And what did they come home with? Bags of candy.
Sweets, cakes.
And, you know, you look at the fast food restaurants and different restaurants at the end of the day, those lines are long for lunch. They're long on the way home. Are we cooking meals for our families like we used to? You gave a great history of your family, and I'm sure for for your family to get where they were. They weren't spending all that money on food out in, you know, eating out at restaurants. Mm-hmm. Because when you eat at restaurants, you don't know what people are putting in the food, the different seasonings and stuff. And so with these rates, we need to look at not only bringing our doctors home who can help us with this, but start some programs in the country to stem the progression of it.
I mean, when we talk about alarming statistics, we talk about just the average cost of living in this country, and then we look at what is the cost of foods. It's a crying shame that it's actually less expensive to buy junk food than to buy fruits, to buy healthy foods. I think we need to change that, whether it's removing VAT on those products, removing duty on healthy products. I think in the long run, obviously, that's going to be a very positive contribution to turning the tide in terms of childhood obesity. Children who are obese are going to be obese adults, and they're going to be young adults, and then they're going to be middle-aged and elderly, and obese families are going to obese adults are going to lead to obese children, and exactly. The cycle is just going to go continue and continue. Mm-hmm. So we can't throw our arms up in the air. We need to do something, and obviously I think we need to start at childhood, even if in terms of infancy, in terms of what are we doing in terms of the amount of formula. We always like to encourage women to breastfeed, but in terms of their very high percentage of infants who are being overfed, and it starts from infancy. Yeah. We need to education is the key. Maybe if we need to, in the elementary schools, primary schools, we start with healthy lunches, healthy breakfasts. We need to encourage them to stop eating the fast foods, to stop having a sedentary lifestyle, to be physical. And we're a very unhealthy nation. We don't walk anywhere. You're like right. everyone. It's obviously because of the country itself, there are not a lot of safe sidewalks, but we can find parks to walk in, to jog in, and get some form of exercise. But what are the risk factors of obesity, Dr. Davis Simmons?
So, I mean, obesity, for one, let's describe obesity, right? So obesity is now considered a disease. It is a chronic, relapsing medical condition, and it really is just due to what it is excess fat cells, right? So that's what it is. So risk factors for obesity are really complicated. So we used to think it's just, it's diet, you don't exercise enough, my family's big boned. But it's complicated. It's a lot more than that. That is the tip of the iceberg. But there are many factors that kind of add to obesity. Yes, it's obviously taking in excess calories, highly palatable food, fast foods, not moving enough. And obviously, if you have a family history of obesity, so if you come from a family, the learned behaviors are there. There is some genetics involved. But things like, you know, women going through menopause, there's weight gain. So if you started off overweight, you can have, you know, 15-pound, 20-pound weight gain, and that can push you into obesity. You know, not losing weight after pregnancy. A lot of women retain their weight. Medications for men who have low testosterone, that can add to some weight gain. That becomes a vicious cycle. Medications that you may on may promote weight gain. Right? So financial stress, emotional stress, lack of sleep. So it is really complicated. It is not just one thing. So there's many different risk factors. But I think culturally, you kind of highlighted a lot of stuff, is that, you know, we are moving less, eating more. And, you know, sometimes we're even using that food as comfort. Yes. Or it becomes a cultural thing. Well, I'm going to have these type of foods and I need three meats, as Dr. Martin will probably talk about later, kind of having this full plate that's hanging over, so I'm doing well in life. So it's multifactorial.
And then we look at the link between obesity and the numerous chronic non-communicable diseases, and then even in terms of cancers. As a surgeon, even for prostate cancer, you're at a greater risk of not getting prostate cancer, but having a more aggressive form of the disease if you're obese. Even if you get any cancer, whether it's ovarian, breast, lung cancer, prostate cancer, if you're obese, you're not going to do as well in terms of surviving the disease itself, and you're going to have a higher risk of having a recurrence as well. So there's so many manifestations of having being obese or being overweight. And are we really just defining that in terms of body mass index?
Yeah. So you want to define obesity? Yeah. Okay, I'll let Dr. Martin define it.
Yes, the World Health Organization and the Powers Obesity Federation, they do still look at body mass index. That's the standard. But they're also looking at the fat percentage because, as you know, a body mass index of 30 places us in the obese category. But a guy who lifts weights or a young woman who lifts weights can have a BMI of 30, 32, 35, but she could have a very low fat percentage, you see? And so in our clinic, we when I do the body compositions, I also include the fat percentage. And so if the fat percentage is over the amount that someone should have for their age and height, then it correlates with the body mass index that's over 30, then we can say, yes, the body mass index is spot on. But yes, worldwide, it's still looked at as the defining factor of obesity. But the person who's doing the assessment needs to dig a little deeper.
Okay, so when we're talking about obesity, we mentioned about 70% of the population are fighting this, and it is a disease in itself, and it's something that's they're very difficult to overcome.
Yes.
And even if you do overcome it, it's something that you struggle with throughout life, and you have to have a lot of perseverance, and you have to have sacrifice, and you can't do it alone. A lot of times when we talk about exercise and getting away from being sedentary, we encourage people to exercise in groups. We encourage them to do things that they love to do, because if you don't like doing it, you're not going to stick with it. And maybe you don't want to wake up 6 in the morning, but if you have 3 friends who are going to do it, there's going to be someone who's going to push you to do it. If you're going to have no one out there and it's pitch black and you want to go and walk, unless you're doing it with someone else, you're not going to really have that motivation. But let me not be a remiss in giving out the numbers. This is an interactive show. This is Guardian Radio 96.9. You can call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 326-4259. Or you can call toll-free from the Family Islands at 242-300-5720. So we have two of the leading experts on obesity in our station this evening. We're very pleased and here to answer the difficult questions. And 70% of the population who are listening have a problem with obesity. So please don't feel afraid or reluctant to call in. There are no stupid questions. And we want to get to the bottom of this problem and save our nation. So let's talk about lifestyle changes. What are some of the lifestyle changes that we can recommend?
Well, before I even get into lifestyle changes, you pointed out quite a few things, Dr. Pinto. You talked about the food and all of, fast food is cheaper than going into the grocery store. In some cases, it is. But right now, some of the fast food, one meal is like $10, $15. Mm-hmm. And we can go into the grocery store, and that's one meal. We can go into the grocery store and buy a chicken or buy some wings or drumsticks, go home with some rice. And some, if you can't afford the fresh vegetables, you can get frozen vegetables or the canned vegetables and wash them off. Come out having spent about $15, maybe $30, but you have a meal with leftovers depending on the size of your family. And you know what you've put in it, and then you've gotten some vegetables on the side. So I wanted to touch on that as it relates to lifestyle and choices. I also wanted to touch a little bit, and Dr. David Simmons, I think you should join in as well. Before we even get to the lifestyle changes, we have to look at whether persons are addicted to this food. And you talked about, all of us, we have over 70% of our population who are obese, so what's going on? We don't want to get up to exercise. The food, what studies are showing, and when I did my dissertation, I worked with 8 obese Bahamian women. And earlier you mentioned about children having obesity and overweight from childhood. All of those 8 women, except one, was obese from childhood. Mm-hmm. So it carried over into adulthood. The food was the primary source of addiction. So even when they lost about 20 pounds and they were placed back into the social setting, just like how we put a drug addict back into that setting, they could probably fight it off for a day or two, but eventually they fall right back into those habits because, of course, the food has addictive-like qualities. And that's what they're doing a lot now. They're doing a lot of studies. They're researching the food and the quality of food and what causes persons to gravitate to certain carbohydrates. And it's those sweets, it's the cookies, it's the chip, all those processed foods. You mentioned about the school children. Well, the Bahamas government is doing something with the school children. They are giving them the breakfasts now in school. They started that last year. And I believe that this year they've already started in the Family Islands. And so they are aware and they're trying to, begin programs from the stage of childhood by introducing the food program in schools. I know the Pan American Health Organization is also working very diligently with government to address the food in schools with children, and they understand that that's the source. We have to start at the foundation. But when we look at lifestyle changes, all of those areas I just mentioned, we have to look at. We have to look at, you know, what's happening in the home. We have to look at the parenting. We have to look at the economics in the home, because I may want to change my lifestyle, but mommy may not. Mommy is the sole provider, and she can only afford this, you know. Or I am as the mother, and I'm obese. I can only afford this. I can't afford to come to see someone like myself. So lifestyle changes start with identifying and owning up to the problem.
Oh, it's not only what we eat. It's also the portions. And then we're not even talking about what we drink.
Exactly.
We're very unhealthy in what we drink.
Yes. We drink our calories.
We drink our calories as well.
Exactly. So when we look at that, we have to look at all of those things. But I have an acronym that I use with the lifestyle changes. It's called PIP. We have to start to plan. We go into the grocery stores without a list. So we end up buying things that when we go back at home, we duplicate it in our cupboards. Mind, we go into the grocery store with a certain amount of money. We talk about the economics. So we overspend and we still don't come home with the things that we need. So writing a list, looking at the ingredients and starting to learn how to read those labels, that's extremely important. And how do we prepare the food? Are we baking, boiling, broiling, or grilling with very little sauce, that protein sauce? Are we including vegetables, whether we could afford the fresh and we can only afford the can? Rinse it off. Are we including a good source of fruits? Maybe 1 to 2 fruits for adults and about 3 to 4 for children. And then the portions. Now that's when we get into, and it's a culture.
Portion distortion.
It's portion distortion. You know, we eat with our eyes first. And so, and as a child, we're giving children adult portions. And you both are physicians and you're a surgeon. So, you know, we're stretching that stomach, which is a certain size. And we're saying to children, eat everything off that plate because so many people in the world are starving. And so from a child, that's embedded into our mindsets. So portions are extremely important. And in addition to that, like you mentioned, we're drinking our calories as well. And so we have a presentation that we call Obesity in a Bottle.
Yeah.
And all I talk about is the drinks that we are drinking and buying. And there's
Starbucks,
no juice.
The alcohol.
Mm-hmm. The juice. The alcohol.
So it is.
Yeah, you know. So there's no 100% fruit juice unless you take that fruit and juice it yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, there are always, we speak about even with every disease, and we are here to emphasize obesity is a disease.
It's a disease.
Yeah. I don't think people understand that it is a disease, and we have to look at it in that way. Okay, we're going to speak further on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks with BAMU urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Beulah Gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with a loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks with Bahamian Urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. It's my pleasure to have my cousin, Dr. Ariane Davis-Simmons, who is an intensivist, internist, and endocrinologist, and Dr. Jeanette Martin, RN, PhD, who is a counselor and behavior therapist and certified health and chronic disease coach. We were talking about obesity, and that's the topic of today. It's an overwhelming problem, unfortunately, for our country. We're the fourth in terms of per capita obesity in the world. That is a shocking, startling statistic, and it's just continuing to get worse. We're overwhelmed with childhood obesity, and it starts in childhood. But let's talk about how we can turn the tide. What are modifiable risk factors, or what can we change, what can we not change? What is the role of race? What is the role of genetics? Are we pre-programmed to be obese? When we look at countries throughout the world were primarily of African ancestry. Why do we have a higher rate of obesity than, for example, Asian countries? Is it just diet, or does genetics play a role?
I mean, it's a bit of both. So if you look at the Bahamas maybe 60 years ago, we weren't like this. Same genetics, but we weren't as heavy as we were today. So as the years progress, we're getting more and more obese, and our waistlines are expanding. And why do I think this is happening? It's Dr. Martin highlighted it. It's the highly palatable food. So yes, there is a genetic predisposition that can be, but I think it's the foods that are driving it. So, you know, with the corn syrup, high processed foods, they are stimulating a different part of the brain, right? And this is what we're talking about, food addiction. So it is stimulating the pleasure centers of the brain, that dopamine. So people keep going back for more and more. And, you know, what a lot of the foods we're eating, do you notice on the label it says for export only, mm-hmm. for those type of things? Okay. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those, the chemicals and the products that are in those foods are banned in Europe. They're banned in certain places because they have disruptors in it that can cause, potential to cause diseases, cancers, and can cause obesity.
So they're banning some of those same products the food in the United States.
Yeah. But they're slow to it in comparison to Europe. Yeah. And a lot of our food we get is from the U.S.
From the U.S.
So I think that is playing a role too. So there's something called endocrine disruptors that you can find in different food colorings, in plastics, things that we are exposed to, and it can promote obesity and then as a sequelae, metabolic disease. So I don't think it's all genetics. You know, patients like to say, or people like to say, I'm just big-boned because my family, my people are big-boned. Not really though, right? So when you look at their skeletal structure, if they get a density scan, it's pretty much the same as anybody else. It's just this excess fat that's on top of it. And then that's the excess fat that leads to the metabolic issues.
Have there ever been any studies just looking at the different islands and looking at the more industrialized islands such as Grand Bahama, New Providence, compared to the smaller islands in terms of obesity rates where, for example, in Cat Island, I'm sure you walk a lot more than you would if you live in Nassau. I'm sure you'll have a lot more in terms of fish and do a lot of more farming and eat a lot of healthier living and healthier eating.
That would be an interesting study. Are you aware of anything looking at it?
No, the only thing that was done was the living, the survey, and that was in 2001. And what they did was in the family islands, they targeted the schools and the children up to, I think, grade 6 or 7. And it was found that, of course, the higher rates of overweight and obesity was in the capital and Freeport. And the higher rates were among young ladies, women, young children, girl children. So, you know, we're seeing that trend with the children and the adult women, overweight and obesity.
And when we talk about the disease itself and the link to other diseases and the risk factors associated, we talk about if you're obese, you're going to be at greater risk of diabetes, you're at greater risk of hypertension, heart disease, you're going to more than likely have a shorter lifespan for many reasons. There's a link between obesity and obstructive sleep apnea. It looks in terms of our male population. Obstructive sleep apnea, low testosterone, and the most important organ for Bahamian men, related to erectile dysfunction. So if you want to get yourself functioning at a high level all the way up into your 80s, avoiding obesity is a very important first step. We jointly always see a lot of patients who have andropause. What is andropause, and can people understand what is the male version of menopause?
Good. So if we're relating it to obesity, so as Dr. Pinto said, is that obesity affects you head to toe, right? And it's due to excess fat cells. So with men, when you see the decreasing testosterone, why does that happen? That's, again, multifactorial. So the excess fat cells is actually converting the testosterone. It has an enzyme that converts the testosterone to estrogen. So these obese men have more estrogen. Yeah, they have more estrogen. And that estrogen feeds back and reduces the signal to produce the testosterone. So that's what leads to the low testosterone. You also have the excess fat cells that make inflammatory markers. Right? So more inflammation. That also can lead to low testosterone. The excess fat cell obesity leads to sleep apnea, right? As Dr. Pinto said. So with sleep apnea, that's an acute stress on the body, right? So you're having these arousals multiple times a night. So it's an acute stress. And what I try to explain to my male populations, if you have sleep apnea, your body's going to choose, well, I'm in acute stress. Right? So testosterone is for quality of life. You don't need testosterone to live, but you need to have a good quality of life as a man. So the body chooses, okay, I'm in acute stress, so I'm going to down-regulate testosterone production to kind of function properly. So what is a good thing is that with treatment of sleep apnea, the testosterone can get better. By losing the excess fat over time, because that's the main culprit, testosterone can start to come up. But it's the most important thing is really to never get obese in the first place. So you can have overall good quality of life.
And then the issue with male menopause, which is medical term is andropause, it can basically make you a shell of your former self.
Correct.
You don't recognize yourself. Mm-hmm. You are overweight. You're losing muscle mass. Uh-huh. You're prone to depression. You can have heat intolerance, you can have hot flashes. Okay. And then once you have obstructive sleep apnea, where essentially you can have multiple episodes of hypoxia, where you're not getting sufficient oxygen to your brain, to your various organs, including your heart. It can have disastrous effects over years. It's going to put you at a greater risk of a cardiovascular event, heart attack, myocardial infarction, or a stroke. So it's something that we need to address, and it's a pandemic in this country.
It is.
And once you become obese, once you have obstructive sleep apnea, and once you have low testosterone, it's a vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. Low testosterone makes the sleep apnea worse, which makes the obesity worse. Obesity makes the sleep apnea worse. And you'll never get out that vicious cycle. And many times you're so depressed, you're socially withdrawn, you're having marital issues, you have low sexual libido, you don't have that energy to do anything. There are many ways of describing andropause, male menopause, but one thing that will ring true for a lot of men, and I see it day in and day out in my practice, is that you just don't have that motivation to do things you used to love to do. You're not motivated to do anything. You don't have any more get up and go. All you do is sit on the couch, and many times the TV is watching you because you just fall asleep at the drop of the hat. And it's not just changing you and your body, but in your mind, because you also have issues with concentration, issues with memory. But you can be a danger to yourself and to your loved ones, because you can fall asleep at the drop of a hat. You can fall asleep when you're driving. Mm-hmm. You can be a danger to the public, to driver, danger to yourself or the occupants of the car. Mm-hmm. And many men, this happens when they're middle-aged, when they have an enlarged prostate. In many cases, it's benign enlargement of the prostate, BPH. They're drinking caffeine all day long just to survive. That caffeine is a diuretic, a stimulant. That's going to make them want to pee more frequently. So they always had a problem with peeing too frequently. They had always had a problem with emptying their bladder. It just magnifies the problem. So in terms of treating erectile dysfunction, you don't treat the symptom. We need to treat the root cause. So we need to treat the root cause of the obesity. We need to treat the root cause of the sleep apnea. We need to treat the root cause of the testosterone.
Which is the obesity, yeah.
Which is the obesity. So the first thing we need to do is we need to capture these individuals before they get even worse. Let's prevent them from becoming obese. Mm-hmm. How do we do that? We talked about in infancy, we're going to talk about providing education to mothers so that they don't overfeed the kids. When they're in preschool, we want to make sure that they have healthy lunches, even if it's provided free by the government in terms of breakfasts. Hopefully they'll roll out lunches eventually. We want to encourage them to be involved in sports, etc. But how do we stop our nation from going from 70% obesity to 90% in 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, so you highlighted a lot of the facts. It's that it needs to start in the home, right? So it has to start in the home, because the children are only eating what the family is providing for them, right? They don't go to the grocery store. They're not purchasing the meal. So it's really starting at the basis of home. And I think that's educating also parents on what the meal should look like. What are the portions? And I think both Dr. Martin and I do that when we see someone coming in for childhood obesity. You have to show them the portions, because these children are getting adult size portions. It's incredible.
It's phenomenal.
The juices, the soda. So it's kind of educating on what is a healthy plate. And a lot of people don't realize that. They don't realize what is a starch, what is an adequate size of protein, how much chicken nuggets really is the right portion. So I think just educating is important, because everyone wants their child to be healthy. Right. I don't think anybody wants their child to be unhealthy. Yeah, exactly. And then getting them moving, decreasing the screen time. Mm-hmm. All right, a lot of the behaviors that we have learned that may be maladaptive, that may be harming us, have been learned in our family unit, okay? So how we eat, when we eat, what drives us to eat. And like as we talked about earlier, sometimes there's an emotional component. Mm-hmm. I did well in school, so let's go get a treat.
Yeah.
And what is that treat?
Yeah.
It's going to be ice cream, it's going to be cake, it's going to be these type of things.
And we form an attachment to food from that age. You talked about your family earlier, but what we do in the family unit, Christmas, birthdays, all of those social functions, you know, everything is food-based, you know. But what we are doing at Doctors Hospital, and what Dr. David Simmons and I and my team are doing, is we have a weight loss program, a 12-week weight loss program that we run, and anyone can join at any time. Mm-hmm. So it's an open door. And there's a lot of teaching. One evening she was there teaching, it's usually 1 hour every 2 weeks. She was there from 6 o'clock until nearly 8 o'clock.
So many questions.
The questions that came after her presentation, and the same for Dr. Renger and myself. So we never get out of there at 7 o'clock because people are hungry, believe it or not, for this information. The portions, we have the food models. So I let them set up their plate as they're eating now. And then we teach them about, yes, what is a carbohydrate and what a carbohydrate contains. You know, that's the sugar, that's the fiber, and it's the starch. And so how do we choose the healthier carbs? Mm-hmm. Because we need carbs for energy. That's our fuel, but not all carbohydrates are created equally. And so just that teaching opens their eyes. Oh, I thought a carb was just the potato salad and macaroni and rice. They didn't know that carbs were vegetables and milk and the drinks, you see? And so just Oprah used the term, the light bulbs.
Yeah.
Come on. And once you give people information, you've already started to change their mindsets because that's where the behavior change starts, in the mind. And so that's where the transformation starts. And that's where they learn to trust someone like myself mm-hmm. and Dr. David Simmons, because we're taking the time to teach them. We're not pointing fingers. We're asking, okay, how can we help you? This is what you've told me with your nutritional assessment. And so do you mind if I guide you? And that's what I would say, you know. Where would you like to start? One step at a time. The weight didn't come on overnight. It's not going to go off overnight. Mm-hmm. But each week, you're going to get stronger with the walking. Start with 10 minutes, then add another 10 minutes. And before the end of the month, you're up to an hour 5 days a week. Those kinds of things, small baby steps with the food and the exercise. And people are responding.
Yeah.
A lot of Bahamian women will pinpoint a milestone in their life in terms of becoming obese, and that's having a child. And they'll say, okay, they had one child, the average weight gain will be 25, 30 pounds, and they never lose it. Two children, it's 40, 50 pounds later, and they never lose it. Can we go and look for the women who have given birth, and then we talk to them about, you know what, let's have a healthy lifestyle for your infant, but let's also get you to lose that pregnancy weight and keep it off? I think that would be instrumental. I think that's where a lot of women start with that obesity battle, and they never overcome it, and that's having a child. And that's just a natural part of our society, is having children.
Exactly. So, I mean, the thing is, as a mother, I have three, so I understand. Sometimes you put yourself last, right? So you do everything else. So they don't make the time, or they aren't able to make the time, or don't know how to carve out the time to exercise or prepare the meals. Because it's amazing that a lot of patients that Dr. Martin and I see, they're eating out three times a day. Mm-hmm. Every meal is eaten out. They do not prepare anything in the home, and they'll just say, I do not have the time. So all of that kind of snowballs, and then obviously as you age, you know, metabolism can slow down. So it becomes this vicious cycle. So it's, again, understanding the cornerstones of what do I need to do to lose weight. It is, in numbers, it's a simple thing. It's creating a calorie deficit, mm-hmm. right? You have to, your body needs a certain amount of calories to maintain, right? Amazingly, the larger you are, the more calories you need to maintain. So all you have to do is do a deficit, create 500 to 700 calorie deficit. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about a big change, small changes. That's a pound a week, mm-hmm. all right? That's not even with exercising. If you add an exercise, that creates more of a deficit. So you lose more than that. Maybe you'll lose 2 pounds a week. So it's also about being consistent. What I find that in our population, we're becoming more like the U.S., we want this kind of instant gratification.
Yes.
Well, I want to lose 40 pounds in a month. And I have patients come and say that to me, and I'm mm-hmm. like, that ain't realistic. Mm-hmm. It will be quick off, but it will be rapid quick on, right? So it's kind of this slow and steady process. You took years to put it on. You stick with the plan. You be consistent. You adhere to a diet plan. So there's multiple studies that have shown that. If you do keto, you do Mediterranean, you do Atkins, it doesn't matter. The weight loss is the same when they look at the individual at 2 years. What plan can you adhere to? So small changes go a long way. Be consistent.
Then we want to motivate our listeners to lose weight. We talked about you're going to have a greater risk of a cancer, many cancers if you're obese. You're going to have a greater risk of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, which can lead to heart attack or stroke, a greater risk of hypertension. You're not going to live as long. And for men, you're not going to have as good an erection. So we'll talk about that more on the other end of the break.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Looking for holiday savings? Sign up for our CostRite membership and unlock exclusive deals on everything from pantry essentials and fresh produce to bed and bath. It's the perfect place to find the best gifts for anyone. Toys for the kids, flat screen TV for dad, fridge for mom, and much more. All at low warehouse prices. Try our member selection products offering big savings and quality. Whether shopping for your home or business, remember, members always save.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back again. This is NASA Guardian Radio, and this is Urologist Speak with BAME urologist Gregory Pinto. I have my cousin in the studio, endocrinologist and internist Dr. Ariane Davis Simmons, and we also have the pleasure of having Dr. Jeanette Martin, RN, PA. So I'm just going to read a quick text question. What should a new mother who has a problem breastfeeding feed her new baby? Obviously, we're going to advocate breastfeeding, but for many women, that's not a choice. So I'll hand that over to both of you.
Okay. I am not a pediatrician, but I would recommend, there's a couple things I'd recommend. For one, if you have a pediatrician, talk to your pediatrician, for your child's pediatrician, because they do have lactation experts who can assist you on how to boost your milk production. There's certain foods that can do it, making sure that you are staying hydrated. There's also certain supplements that can also increase breast milk production. But it can be a frustrating process if your baby isn't latching or if you don't have the milk production. But when we talk about the link in obesity, right, for one, when it's with children who are breastfed over time usually have a less risk of obesity later on. So ones who are introduced cow's milk earlier on, so cow milk-based formula early on, have an increased risk of it. They also have an increased risk of developing diabetes later on in life. Also, if we're talking about kind of epigenetics, meaning even exposure in the womb, children born to obese mothers also have increased risk of developing obesity later on, just because of the genetics in the womb, the hormones and things that they're exposed to. But in terms of increasing milk production, I would say linking with a lactation expert would be the best. And there are ones here locally in the Bahamas.
That's right. So breast milk first and foremost. If the lactation expert, you can, it doesn't help you then, and you want to stop the breast milk. But it's usually recommended that at least 6 weeks, six mm-hmm. to 8 weeks of breast milk, and then, you know, move on. But breast milk first, because it has so many vitamins that the baby needs. And it has stuff that the cow's milk does not have.
And it promotes immunity.
And
it,
yes, exactly. the passive antibodies from the mother.
And so that first, but if you don't do that, then go on to the cow's milk. But even with that, you need to watch with the amount you're giving your child, mm-hmm. because with breast milk, as the baby is sucking, when they feel full, they stop.
Yes.
But if you're giving them a 4-ounce bottle, a newborn baby, that's too much. And so that's where the overfeeding starts from infancy, from birth as well. You see them bringing up the food because you've given them too much out of a bottle. But on the breast, they're going to suck and then stop when they're full. So that's another positive aspect of breastfeeding.
There are thousands of Bahamian adults and residents who have failed to lose weight because they've done everything. They've changed their diet. They've implemented exercise. Obviously, there are medical and there are surgical options available. But let's take that we have a call. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Dr. Pinto, and to your panel.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, once I'm here, you know what I'm facing here. I was just listening to the conversation. I haven't heard you on the air in a while. And so, unfortunately, the mother of my children is facing the same problem post-gestation or pregnancy, right?
Yes.
And this is a problem, like most women, they always call it baby fat. And so one of the doctors in there said something very true. It's like some of them accept it and they become complacent, but it's not as healthy as they think. I don't know why they can't just get rid of this body weight, which is not healthy. But when you, the problem is with us men, when we talk to them about it, sometimes they take it in the wrong way, you know what I mean? And that's not right. So, I mean, everything is just, you have children and you bear certain things in common, and so whether you're married or not, you wish for their well-being. But some of them take it in a negative way. So I wanted to just share some knowledge because nobody is able to think about everything all the time as it relates to the dogma of science, right?
Yes.
And so it's not good to be so dogmatic as professionals also. But I've been reading nutritional books for so long until I know that one of the simple ways is to basically, let's say with the keto diet, you know, some foods can be accepted under the keto diet because they would be low in carbohydrates and high in nutrition, right?
Yes.
And so the keto diet would then means that your body would be low in sugar and you start to burn the fats. And so the fat in itself is not cytotoxic to cancer cells, but they stop the proliferation near tumors. And these are studies that show. So the keto diet is beneficial. But basically, if you stick to a plant-based diet, that would be one of the ways to go. And so maybe even if you eat meat with a high vegetable diet, it would be better than consuming a lot of carbohydrates because the body would turn to fat as a source of energy versus the cheap carbohydrates that is always there, that is simple or complex. And so I just wanted to share that. I have a book on showing the chemical constituents of mother's milk. And my youngest brother just had two twins, so I know his wife is breastfeeding, which is the passive immunity, et cetera. So these kind of conversations we need to get to us too, Ms. Dr. Pinto, because I'm just learning. I had a question to ask you, but I'll be for next week's show, and so you can prepare yourself. I just found out about the diuretic hormone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll talk about that next. But I thank you for your learned views on the topic at hand, and you did make a lot of important points. Would you like to?
No, I mean, caller, thank you for your comments. So there are a lot of benefits to some of the diets that he talked about.
Yes.
You know, the keto diet, lower carbohydrate diet, things like that. But when we ask patients to choose a plan that creates a calorie deficit, it's something like they can adhere to. So if there's some who would say, I tried keto, it worked, but I only could have done it for 3 months. I felt it was too challenging. So Again, it's just picking a diet you're able to adhere to for the long term that creates a deficit in calories. Yeah. So when we take a nutritional history, we ask patients what have they tried before and what has been successful. You don't want to repeat things that did not work for them. And unfortunately, for some people, they can't adhere to keto, but it is a diet that can work for a lot of people.
Right. And the keto diet is sustainable for a short period of time as well. Because the carbohydrates, everything is a carbohydrate. And Carla, you shared some really, really good points. So you're well read, and that's a good thing. As it relates to encouraging your female partner to come in, you should encourage her to come in and come with her, because I have men, gentlemen, who come to the meetings, to the sessions. Pardon?
Oh, we have another call coming in.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
Early days, Doc, in the waste along with you doctors. Doc, I have a situation whereby I need to be resolved. Okay, for years, I were a vegetarian. I ate lone vegetables, fruits and vegetables. One time I took sick and I went to the doctor, right?
Yes.
And the doctor told me that I need iron, okay? In other words, I wasn't getting enough iron from the vegetables. So I start eating like fish and stuff like that, right?
Okay.
Not so much meat. But what I found out is that after I start using the fish and stuff, right, I stayed in the habit, and I want to get back off of that because I don't like it. But, you know, I don't say I go full force with fish and stuff like that, right? But what do I do to keep my iron up with just fruits and vegetables?
Well, that's a wonderful question. Yes, so if you're going to try to take red meat out of your diet, how do you do definitely need iron. You do need vitamin B12 and other. Let me give that question to the panelists. Okay.
The vegetables are good, but you have to look at the types of vegetables that you need to eat more of. The dark leafy vegetables, you will get iron from those dark leafy vegetables,
yes,
like the spinach and the kale. Beans are very good as well. It's a good source of protein and fiber. And some beans, depending on the type, you can get a lot of iron from as well. And then if your hemoglobin is really low, doctor would give you some iron tablets or you know, medication to increase that. But red meat occasionally would also help. And liver. You know, cook the liver, but make sure there's some redness left in the liver itself. But there are vegetables. The sweet potato is loaded with iron as well. So the root vegetables have a lot of iron, and those root vegetables are different types of potatoes, and then the dark leafy vegetables, and of course the beans.
So in medicine, we always want to address the root cause. So yes, many times low iron is related to dietary issues, but it could be something more sinister going on. So we have to look at the underlying issue. Are you losing blood for one reason or the other, which might be an earliest sign of something that we need to address quite urgently, whether it's cancer or upper gastrointestinal or lower gastrointestinal bleed, etc. So don't take everything into your own hands. Don't try to... If you found to have low iron, or if you're feeling fatigued, or you have low hemoglobin, there may be something more sinister going on. Don't try to address the issue on your own. So we're tying things up. Let's talk about medical treatment. And I think this is such a vast topic. We're going to have you both come back. But let's talk about Ozempic.
Okay. Yes. So if we talk about medical obesity management and medications for obesity, I think all of our callers are probably familiar with the newer kids on the block, which would be semaglutide. At lower dose, it's called Ozempic. At a higher dose, it's called Wegovy. And then we have other agents that are once weekly, like Mounjaro, low dose, which is typically a diabetes medication, and high dose Zepbound. So how do these newer agents work? They're all injectables. So it can either be a daily medication if you're using Victoza or Saxenda, or their weekly dosing. These medications are very similar to hormones that your gut makes, called GLP-1, GLP-1 hormone. The role of this hormone is to do three main things. It slows down the way the food moves through the system. So when the food comes into the system, it also helps your body make a little more insulin. So for those who have diabetes, it helps to lower blood sugars. But it also sends a signal to the brain, the hypothalamus. That is your hunger center. So the GLP is a satiety hormone. It's a feel-full hormone. So it sends a signal to the brain to say, hey, I'm full, stop eating. So these medications are really good as an add-on to lifestyle modification. So a calorie deficit diet, exercise, they're great as an add-on to help you reach your weight target. So they make you feel full. So you're able to, again, adhere to that diet plan for the long term to reach those targets. So with these medications, when we look at all the studies, weight loss, kind of just what we call placebo-driven weight loss, is about 10% to 15% of your excess body weight. But if coupled with diet and lifestyle, the weight loss can be significant. And both Dr. Martin and I have seen that. So these medications are game changers because we highlighted earlier in the conversation is that obesity is a relapsing, remitting condition, right? So if you notice when you start a diet, you lose some weight, and then those hunger signals start coming up, and you start to fall off the wagon, and then you have weight regain. And we see that a lot of people experience that. So we know that the physiology of obese people when they lose weight does not become the same as thin people, right? All of that hunger hormones, your body is trying to defend that higher fat mass. The body wants to go back to that highest weight. So it does multiple things. It sends up hunger signals when you start that diet. It slows down metabolism over the time also to kind of get back to that weight. So this is why there has to be consistency. But these medications help to modulate those patterns, meaning it makes you feel full so you can adhere. So they're game changers. And we've both seen patients who've lost tremendous amount of weight with just diet, lifestyle, and then the addition of medication. I'm going to let Dr. Markin talk about some of the case studies.
Go. Do that. Okay, so here's a case study with lifestyle change and Ozempic. Okay, this is a 27-year-old female. She had prediabetes and hyperlipidemia. And so a patient of Dr. Davis Simmons, her initial weight was 260.6 pounds and her body mass index was 36. Her waist circumference was 44 and her fat percentage was 49.4%. Her visceral fat was 8 on a scale from a scale of 1 to 12. 12 months later, this lady was down to 210 pounds. And that is with lifestyle changes and Ozempic. Her body mass index came down to 29 from the original of 36. And her fat was within the normal for her age and weight, which was 36. Okay? And so that's 12 months. Her lipids were normal at the end of 12 months, and her glucose was normal at the end of 12 months. And so we're seeing that those kinds of results. And as she says, it has to be coupled with medical nutrition to achieve this kind of weight loss.
So obesity is a very complex issue. There are a lot of variables associated with it, and it's a very troubling issue in our country. It definitely requires another visit from both of you. You both are very learned individuals in your own right. And I thank you very much, Dr. Jeanette Martin, for being here. And I'd like to thank my cousin, Dr. Ariane Davis Simmons. I know our grandfather is very proud of you. I'm very proud of you. On a side note, just say that our granduncle, my grandfather's little brother, was one of the first, if not the first, general surgeon in the Bahamas, Dr. Sylvester Lucius Davis. So our great-grandparents came from nothing, no education. Their house burnt down, and they had to start their life over, and they have planted great fruits, and we're part of the fruit that are providing for our country. Also like to hail one of our favorite uncles, Dr. Lawrence Davis, who did wonderful things in his own right, went on to do a PhD in United Kingdom and a nuclear physicist, something that was unheard of for a black man at that time. So anything is possible. Poverty does not define you. You define yourself. And if you have hardship, let that hardship lead you to great things. Aim for the stars. Even if you don't achieve that, you're going to fall short, but you're still going to be in the heavens. Have a good evening, and see you next week, Bahamas.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.